Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Greg Dykeman in his major league debut grounded out his first time. Left-handed batter. Here's the pitch by Lynn. A fly ball, shallow right field, coming in. Vaughn, base hit. His first big league base hit, Greg Dykeman, a soft single into right field. And they're going to save that baseball for the trophy case of Greg Dykeman.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
We talk baseball every Sunday morning from 9 to noon, sometimes a little bit later if the Cubs have an afternoon game. They've got a night game tonight, so that means the writers are off. They're able to relax on a Sunday morning. They don't need to be at the ballpark, and that seemed like the perfect time for us to bother Sahadev Sharma and make him give us some of his quality Sunday morning. I mean, what are Sunday mornings made for except to talk to jamokes like me, Sahadev? I know there's kids and there's a wife and there's nice weather outside, but instead, thank you for your time on the Score. Good morning.
Of course. Yeah, happy to do so. I'm technically off this weekend after being in Colorado, so I enjoyed Ben Harper out in Evanston last night and just hanging out this morning. So happy to talk some baseball with you.
That's awesome. Canal Shores Country Club there for Ben Harper last night. Looks beautiful out there. Nice night to be out and hear some music, I assume.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It's one of those things that if you live in Evanston, everybody talks about it. We've only been here for 3 years, so it was our first time to actually get out there, and it lived up to the hype of my fellow Evanstonians talking to me about it. So it was a good time.
Outstanding. Sahadev, where does this system rate right now? I saw somebody had an 11th out of 30. You know, and it's difficult, and it'll take a little more time to sort of figure out how some of these guys do and what seasons go on. But do the Cubs have a top 10 farm system post trades at this point?
Yeah, I would say it's close. It's not a unanimous top 10 farm system. I believe Fangraphs had them up to 8, and Fangraphs kind of does it where they update almost constantly as trades are made, which I find really interesting. And then, yeah, most others seem to have pushed them into the top 15, close pushing the top 10. So I've talked to some people who say, you know what, there's a ton of upside here. And if it clicks over the next year, it's a top 5, arguably could be one of the best farm systems in the game, but it has to click, right? There's all this. I was just scrolling through the box scores of the minor leagues, and the most exciting ones are is the Arizona Complex League, right? that just tells you everything you need to know. They're far away. There are some exciting bats, probably some of the best bats in the Arizona Complex League, but they're teenagers, and it's going to take a while if that's the way they're going to do things. I just don't believe I shouldn't say I don't believe. I hope that's not the route that Jet is going and that he's true to his word in the sense that this is going to be quicker than, say, the timetables of guys like Owen Casey and Preciado. We'll see who remains in the farm system over the next few years and who's used as trades, who they're going to build around, all those different things. I think that's going to be the most fascinating thing over the next however long, whether it's this offseason that we really start finding things out or over the course of the next couple of years.
It was just a gut feeling at the beginning, but I think I'm still there that next year will not be about prioritizing winning on the big league level, that it'll be like a season of that. and then they'll hit spring training running in 2023 with hopes of being, you know, that surprise contender, that kind of thing. But is there a chance that they want to hit spring training next year feeling like they've got a shot to contend? Like, are they going to be that aggressive in the offseason, depending on what they have? Trying to read between the lines of stuff that Jed has been saying.
Yeah, I am too, to be honest. And I think he's not 100% sure how the market's going to work, what type of opportunities they have. So he's being a little hesitant as to say, like, you know, where exactly what the plans are for 2022. I think there are opportunities. I think that they cannot do what they did when they first came. We need to be aware also that the farm system or the rules are changing, right? CBA is going to be new, and we have to figure out how they can take advantage of different things. What are the best ways to build a team under whatever the new CBA will be? So I think we need to be patient and see what's going to happen. I think if they don't go out and add some real, you know, high money players, I don't know if that's the best of the best out there, or you take a couple 1-, 2-, 3-year deals, see what you can get. I think what the Giants did is a good way to look at it. What the Cubs did this past offseason, they can't do that, right? They can't slow play everything and start picking from the remaining free agents in late January. That's not going to work. If you're talking about really contending, you need to, if you're going to look in the undervalued route, you have to do it early. You have to pounce on guys, maybe pay a little bit more than you want to, but I think that they have to start spending right away. I don't think you can go out there next year with a team that, you know, with a whatever $80-90 million payroll.
Is Nicholas Castellanos going to opt out? He's got 2 years left. What was it? Was it a 4-year, $64 million deal? Which is so 16 per. He'll get more than 2 years at 16 each if he opts out. And would the Cubs really consider doing that? A guy of his age, we know it's a great fit in a number of ways, and he never should have been allowed to leave town. But do you think they'll actually consider that?
So when I wrote what I wrote, I was trying to use Castellanos as a jumping off point of saying what I said just now, that they have to spend, they have to find a bat, they have to find someone. They can't slow play this and say let's start building for a winner in 2024 or something like that, right? So they, I think Castellanos does make sense. Yeah, is he a little older and may not be perfect for the timeline? I'm not sure. He's gonna be 30 next year, I believe. He'll be playing his age 30 season next year. I think that's not a terrible time to start. Like a guy that, if you can get him for 5 years, that should work. He's starting to figure things out, really, like clicking at the plate the last 2 years. I know 2020 was a weird year for everyone, so I kind of throw that out, but he clearly figured some things out with the Cubs, whether it's just mentally figuring things out or physically as well. I think he's a top-tier offensive player. They're going to have spots in the corner outfield spots. There's going to be the DH. I think he makes a ton of sense. And like you just said, I mean, 2 years, $32 million. If he can't beat that on the open market, then something's severely wrong with the free agent market, right? That something went awry with the CBA if he can't beat that. I think that's the only question. Does he – I don't know what type of situation it is with the CBA. Do you opt out when you don't know what the CBA is going to be? I think he has to make that decision before the CBA is figured out. But with Scott Boras as his agent, I think Boras is going to know that whatever the CBA is, he's going to be able to beat 232 in the open market. It would make sense for the Reds to aggressively try and bring him back, too. He makes a lot of sense for the Cubs, I think, in multiple ways. I know he'd fit in well in that clubhouse, and he'd want to be on a winner. That's the main thing. If they sign him, that's an indication that they are trying to win sooner rather than later, because Castellanos isn't going to sign with the team that says, listen, we have a 3-year plan here or something like that. He wants to be competing right away.
Sahadev Sharma, The Athletic, joining me, Matt Spiegel, here on 670 The Score on Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. So, all right, so what does Jed want in the next offense? You know, when you're going after prospects, sometimes you can't be choosy about traits, right? Like, you take whatever, like, the best guys you can get. But sometimes you can. I'm trying to read into some of the profiles. I like that Dykeman is a guy who, used to be a lot more power and swing and miss, and is now trying to get a little less swing and miss into his game, and is already thinking about it on that level. But, you know, then you look at Madrigal and you're like, oh my God, is this a massive overcorrection to contact and not swing and miss? But trying to get a feel for what kind of offense Jed wants to build. Do you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair question. And I think they learned some lessons over the last, 5-7 years with what they built. And that's to say that you can't just go all in on one trait, right? They went hard in on the power. Unfortunately, those guys didn't develop other characteristics like they had hoped, or they just didn't develop at all, right? There were some misses there along the way. And they never replaced Fowler and Zobrist in any real way. I think they knew that. They just tried to get through it with the talent that they had, and it never really worked. We saw this offense maddening, frustrating over the years. So much talent and didn't really add up to a great team. I think they're looking for different pieces, but they want that. You know, if Javi, Bryant, and Rizzo were all under contract, we wouldn't be talking about this, right? They'd still be here if they weren't free agents at the end of the year. That those trades wouldn't have happened. It's not like he doesn't like those types of players anymore. I think what they're looking for is they want core players like that, but you also have to build around them in a smarter way. The role players matter. One thing that stood out to me was how, and we've talked about this, how Duffy and Nico changed the lineup in May, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, you can't have those guys go down and then the offense just fall apart. That's, I think, a really important point that Jed made when the offense did fall apart again. He said, yeah, that's great that they diversified the lineup, but when your stars are still there, they still need to produce in some way. The offense still needs to show that it can be a formidable group, even if some role players that are important, even if they go down, you still have to find ways to be productive. So that tells me you need a more well-rounded group of core members. I don't know. I feel like when I say that, then I think back. I was like, well, Anthony Rizzo, when he's right, is pretty well-rounded. Chris Bryant, when he's right, is pretty well-rounded. So I'm not. Sometimes I have to go back and remind myself that this offense had a lot of talent at one point, but it just didn't work yet. They're learning from that and how different pieces fit together. It's one of those weird offenses that never really clicked, right? So, yeah. So how can you create a more well-rounded offense? I don't think they're going all in. I wouldn't read into Nico and Madrigal being the only real key pieces that will be up next year that we know of outside of Wilson. I wouldn't read into that and say they're going all in on contact. It's just what they have right now. I mean, look at who else they added as far as prospects. All those guys are power guys. Canario, Kevin Alcantara, even the guys that traded for in the Yu Darvish trade. These guys have power upside. So there is power in the system. And Brandon Davis should be is close to a AAA call-up, I would assume. I'm not sure if he's going to get there this year, but he's earning it, that's for sure. And that's a guy that has a ton of power. So I would not read too much into that, but obviously they're trying to create a more diverse lineup, which I think is huge. I think they really need to, because all of us have been frustrated watching that.
Absolutely. And you know, and the thing is, if you're going to feel like you need some of those guys, whether it's Duffy or whether it's Daniel Murphy in past years or waiting for Zobrist and all those things, having two young cost-controlled guys in Madrigal and Horner that are just going to be there, that's kind of a nice thing. Then you can fill in with power around that, theoretically, and have it work out. Who's useful of the veterans that we're seeing in the future? I'm having Darwin Barney flashbacks, and that's my flashpoint for it, is like, oh man, this guy's really good in 2012 or 2013. He's fun, but he's not really going to be important, but I don't know, he's still good, and will he be here? Those kind of things. So I'm trying to figure out, Patrick Wisdom seems to be giving you a glimpse of some possibilities for next year and beyond. Who else? Bodie? I mean, like, who else are we watching that might be a part of things by the time they're good again?
Yeah, and I would, caveat all this. Like, I think right now when you watch guys like this playing on a bad team and they're performing, I think what you need to, what I try and do is pull back a little bit and say, okay, this guy's proving at minimum he has a bench role on a winning team, because it's just really hard to assume that these guys can be key parts of a winning team when they're, you know, age 30 season and they're finally delivering, getting some regular playing time. Maybe they're more than that, but I need to see it in a real lineup and 162 game season where they're competing all the way through for me to really feel confident about that. But Wisdom is certainly a guy that's opened some eyes. He still has that hole at the top of the zone with the Heat. If he can even come close to kind of adjusting there, he doesn't need to completely close that hole. But if he can adjust in that fashion, I think he's a little bit more than a bench player then. But right now he's clearly, you'd love to have him as a depth piece on a winning team. Rafael Ortega seems the same way. He can play all over in the outfield. He makes hard contact, and he seems to really work his butt off. And I think he has a lot of respect in that clubhouse as far as how hard he's worked to get to this point. So those are two guys that I think, at minimum, they have reserve roles on a winning ball club. I just don't know, like we talked about before, how quickly is this going to be a winning ball club. I think that's important, too. But those two guys have stood out to me. You know, we'll see with the rest of these guys. I'm curious about Greg Dykeman. Obviously, he's more than, you know, he's a prospect that they just traded for, an older prospect. So we haven't seen much of him. But like you said, he made those adjustments in the minors. And I think that's going to be interesting. Can he start tapping into his power again? What type of major leaguer is he? These are all pieces to the puzzle. I don't think there's any key guy, core guy, outside of Wilson Contreras that we're seeing right now. Nico will be back eventually and Madrigal next year. But I think the only guy that you can say is a key part of a winning team is Wilson. And he'd need an extension for you to feel really good about him being around here for that next winning team. But the other two that I mentioned, Ortega and Wisdom, yeah, let's keep watching them. Let's see if they if they're better than a role player in the future. But I think at minimum they've proven that.
Two quickies for you before I let you go. One is, I love the deep dive on Cody Hoyer and what Hadavi and Craig Breslow and everybody are bringing to the table. I love that Hoyer was aggressive about saying, "Oh, you've got thoughts for me? Yes, bring it to me." And it seems like the Cubs infrastructure is in a place where they can offer that kind of thing to people, which I don't think was necessarily the case 4 years ago or even 3 years ago, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, the infrastructure at the major league level has been strong for a while now, I think. And now with Breslow being added and some of the things he's implemented with player development and the people he's hired and the positions he's put them in to succeed, I think there are some good signs. I'm a little concerned about the injuries, but let's see how it keeps going. I think Cubs fans should keep an eye on Justin Steele. That's something to watch going forward. It was great to see Alzolay really bounce back yesterday and use that changeup. All these little things are important right now because, you know, they're going to need to spend on both sides, right? So if they can get some pitching prospects to pop, that'd be great to save them a little money so they can spend on offense or whatever it may be. But Steele, Keegan Thompson, I agree. There's been a change in the way pitching development has happened. Is going on with the Cubs, and I think the major league infrastructure has been great for a while, and now they have some young talent to really work with, and you're spot on with Cody Hoyer. It's all about the player, too, being willing to engage and willing to learn and listen and then say, yeah, I've had success with this pitch, but yeah, maybe it's time to try a tweak. Maybe you're right. Maybe what you're showing me makes sense, and I'm going to dive into it and figure out exactly how to use my pitches and maximize my stuff. So there's more consistency, and I'm I think the goal there with Hoyer is to really separate, create two fastballs and separate them and really maximize those pitches. And I think if he can pull it off, that's great. That's what you want in pitchers, people willing to learn and listen and really dive into stuff.
And then my last thing, David Ross's willingness to be here for this phase. He expressed a desire this week for a little more input on the acquisition side, if I heard that correctly. And I think that's really interesting because, you know, if you're going to be part of it and making the meals and picking the groceries and all that, but also it's just, you know, if there really is that partnership, I wonder if Jed would give in to some of that desire for a little more input on the acquisition side for David as part of adding to his willingness to be here.
Yeah, I think his point was, listen, I'm starting to feel more comfortable in this role, and I'm learning. He understands that he's not the decision maker as far as all that stuff, but he wants it, but he feels his input is valuable, right? He knows the team. He's around the team. He sees things. Sees the strengths, sees the weaknesses. I don't think he's demanding to make all the decisions as much as he feels his input is valuable and he has insights to what's working, what's not, and how they can improve. I think that, you know, the more intelligent voices in there that know what's going on and know what they need, that's great. And I think he has a desire to be a part of that process. He wants to be a more integral part of the process in the off season, and I think he should be. I think that makes sense, right? He doesn't need to be throwing his weight around and demanding things. It doesn't need to be a poor relationship. I think it's a good working relationship. He's worked with these guys in the front office before, and now it's just having a little bit more input and say in what's happening and the direction that things can go. And he knows. He's one of those guys right now that when he talks, he loves all the pitching, you know, the new era of how pitching is done and how there's a lot of, you know, the pitch lab and all that stuff. But he hammers home, if you listen to him, he'll hammer home that you got to get it done on the mound. You don't have your Rapsodo device. Like, all that stuff doesn't matter. Sometimes you don't have your best spin rate. Sometimes you don't have your best stuff. What are you going to do to get it done on that day? You got to go out there and compete, and he's big on that. And I like that aspect. It's not all just numbers and data and pitching in a lab. You have to go out there and perform. I think some of that stuff, he values that stuff as well. So I think that's important when you're building a team as well.
Where in the set did Ben Harper do working your way from the ground on down? Was that the closer? Was it...
I believe that was early on. Was that the opener? I was with friends and my wife, and it was my daughter's birthday yesterday, so I was chasing kids around too. There were kids at the concert, so I believe that's what if I'm remembering correctly, he opened with it, but I could I could completely be
it's okay.
just remembering the order of the night.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got out there. Lord knows I myself am glad that live music is back, baby. And thanks for the time this morning, Sahad. I appreciate it very much.
Of course, Steve. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Man. You got it. Sahad of Sharma from The Athletic. Saw Ben Harper on the tour of that record. I forget what that record's even called, but that was a good show at Metro. Very, very late into the night. Metro, the world's greatest rock club, the great Joe Shanahan over there. And they're back, baby. Go out and support live music if you're feeling safe enough to do it. Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run until the top of the hour. White Sox discussion, roster crunch coming, thoughts and options as Luis Robert will soon return. The good problems to discuss next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hendricks wants a ground ball at somebody. Vaughn would like to get a ball in the air, and a liner into center will give the White Sox the lead. Here comes Engel. It's 1-0. Andrew Vaughn staying hot.
The expectation, assuming that when Eloy gets to the park, he's good to play left field, that creates the opportunity. If you're going to write Andrew in there, which I think I will, he'll play right field. And didn't think it was smart to send him out there without at least one game. And so they worked some extra today. But, I mean, it's amazing how well he's played in the outfield.
Andrew Vaughn in right field is not something you want to see too often in the playoffs. Eloy Jimenez at DH is something you are going to want to see in the playoffs. With Andrew Vaughn's bat in the lineup in left field, in my opinion. Center field will hopefully be Luis Robert. And right field, probably Adam Engel, depending on the matchups, and maybe you'll want to go with a lefty on occasion. Who that lefty will be depends on who's on the playoff roster. Before you get to that playoff roster, the White Sox have to make a roster move when Luis Robert comes back sometime this week. And a roster move is one thing, to take somebody off the active roster and send them down or create an injury or have the good fortune of an injury being timed out very well. I suspect Gavin Sheets will go down to the minors just like Jake Berger did. But Jake Lamb is a guy that I personally would be comfortable launching into the sun. And that would help both your 26-man roster and your 40-man roster. The 40-man roster thing is difficult for some fans to wrap their head around. A team has a 40-man roster, okay, and it doesn't have to just be 40. You can add to those players in season to replace a player who's on the 60-day injured list. In the offseason, teams don't get the extra spots for injured players, and they have to get back down to 40. So, but during the season, they can add to that. So, for instance, right now on the White Sox 40-man roster, because some folks have been on that 60-day disabled list. Evan Marshall is on that 60-day injured list. Luis Robert will be coming off that list. So, but because Luis Robert will be coming off, they'll have to get somebody off of that list. And who's it going to be? As I mentioned, I'd be comfortable launching Jake Lamb into the sun. And I don't say that angrily. I just would be fine not seeing him around. I'd rather see Gavin Sheets than I would Jake Lamb. But I don't know that Tony La Russa is going to feel that way. And Jake Lamb can play third base, which can be helpful. That's for sure. Lourie Garcia can play everywhere defensively, and that is extremely helpful. So the White Sox will have to make some decisions here. What do you think is going to take place? I wonder if a pitcher is going to be excised. Evan Marshall's on the 60-day injured list. Evan Marshall has one more year of arbitration, and he has certainly shown plenty of upside. He doesn't have swing and miss stuff, but he's shown an ability to get guys out and adjust previous to this year, especially. I don't think they'll give up on Evan Marshall. How about Jose Ruiz? Are you comfortable with them saying goodbye to Jose Ruiz, especially now that Ronaldo Lopez has kind of surprisingly established himself as an occasionally viable arm in short relief? Would you rather see Renato Lopez or Jose Ruiz come charging out from the bullpen to the mound in a moment of mild consequence, low leverage situation? That's something to think about. Jose Ruiz, possibly. You wonder how they feel about Jace Fry, who's back down in the minors and has been injured and then bad and then injured and then mediocre and then brought up and then sent back down. Tough to give up on a lefty arm that can hump it up like that and have its moments in the bullpen. Ryan Burr. Could Ryan Burr go from high leverage to DFA? Is that possible, that he goes all the way from high leverage down to DFA? There might be a name that surprises you on that front coming up here in the next week or so. And it'll be very tricky. Luis Gonzalez, Sean, you were mentioning Luis Gonzalez now hurt, out for the season, but you can't put a guy from the minors on the 60-day disabled list, says our buddy James Fox from Future Sox. And he's right about that. So Luis Gonzalez can't go onto that list. Texture says, my wife just said, why did you just spit coffee across the room? And I answered, Spiegel just launched a person into the sun. No warning. I wasn't ready. Yeah, you know, Tony La Russa is going to love himself some Jake Lamb. He does love himself some Jake Lamb. At whose expense, everybody? And then as you get further along and closer towards a playoff roster decision, it's going to get really interesting to me in terms of Hamilton, Goodwin, Lamb, Sheets, all those guys. Good problems.
Now with that news from James, though, I think that your wish of firing Mr. Lamb into the sun will probably happen. Just because.
Think so?
Well, because there's then you're looking at it, and I think that they would bring up Lamb back to the MLB roster just because they've been loving to do that little veteran thing. Like, oh, let's bat Nick Williams second so we just at least can get a look. And, you know, maybe someone out there could, you know, for his next job might see something they like and give him an opportunity based off of that. I think they might want to do that with Lamb, especially with his connection with Tony from Arizona. But now with the fact that they could, you know, at that point send Sheets down and then activate Lamb, now that they have to lose a player, I think they'd probably just rather lose Lamb and not even have to deal with calling down Sheets.
Yeah. These are the interesting issues. When Yasmani Grandal comes back, by the way, they'll have to make a decision at catcher. And let me be on record, nice and loud and clear, Team Sebi Zavala. Team Sebi Zavala. Dude, as a pitch framer, as a receiver, as an overall defensive catcher, he made a play the other day. It was a dribbler that he just kind of hopped up and spun quickly and was ready in throwing position instantly. The other night when we went as a show and we were there, his defensive value. And look, if he's going to run into a home run every once in a while, or three, of course, but if he's going to run into a hit every once in a while, that's fine. That's fine. On this roster, man, I am enjoying seeing Sebi Zavala there. And there could be times where Sebi Zavala ends up coming in to catch the final few innings, because, you know, Yasmani Grandal can scare you a little bit. Wonderful as a pitch framer, but not a terrific defensive catcher at some of the other things. I'm all about Team Sebi, and I didn't necessarily expect to be there, but here we are. 312-644-6767 is the phone number if you want to hop in. And White Sox fans, we can talk about all of this. Because, yeah, this is the good situation. This is you trying to figure out who's who. Steve Stone was on the show earlier and mentioned how good Aaron Bummer looked yesterday, and this has been true for a while. I think if you look at the shape of his pitches, that outrageous slider, and the deception that's there, he's given up a lot of runs and offense on some weak ass contact. And, you know, to me, it looks really, really good, the stuff right now. So here's hoping that that is settled in and in a good spot, and then you feel really good about your number one lefty coming out of the pen. Starting with the Field of Dreams game on Thursday, the White Sox have a schedule that's daunting versus those Yankees who have been red hot for three games, then Oakland for four games, and then on the road at Tampa Bay and at Toronto. So here we go. That record against teams at or below 500 will get a workout, as will that conversation. I have not freaked out about that very much myself. One, because I thought they looked so good in the recent series against the Astros. And it's like, okay, so the sample has been small anyway. And then there, they looked really good there. They're not like some fearful bunch. And the other thing is that, you know who's just above them in terms of the record against at teams at or above 500 is the Dodgers. The Dodgers are right there. So, you know, sometimes you can have fun with sample sizes and things like that. To me, it's more important, can they beat good pitching? And maybe that's, those things are obviously connected because those teams at or above 500 usually have good pitching. But you also might be getting good pitchers on the bad teams, and that could be affecting certain things. The splits that I'll want to be looking at are how they do against high velocity, because that's what they'll get a lot of in the postseason. And if we can look at it, how they do against starters with, you know, quality xFIPs, quality whips, things like that, those kind of splits. How they've done over the course of the year against very good pitching. And that offense does indeed need to get going. Some folks have been struggling. La Russa was talking about that, on how the White Sox offense can go ahead and get it right. This is from before the game yesterday.
You know, we're down on the list of teams with the total home run numbers, which just shows you if you just put the ball in play and you group hits, you're going to score runs. So first thing we can do is, and we don't talk about it, Frank, don't talk about, hey, we got to start swinging for more power. Square the ball up, hard contact, especially with as many guys in our club that have good foot speed. You know, we can do a lot of damage with taking extra bases. And I also think, that, you know, if we square them up, the home runs will come.
The home run. Let's hit 300.
That's Frank Menichino talking about Andrew Vaughn, right? Before Vaughn
yes.
finally hit the first home run. Now Andrew Vaughn, right, you know, coming into form. All right, a couple things. I mentioned that I'm Team Sebi. Andrew Vaughn needs to be in this lineup every single day. Every single day. I don't care about the matchup. You find a way, you find a place to put him in that lineup. And I like him up there at two. I really do. I think that's a lovely place for Andrew Vaughn to hit in the lineup. So, you know, and also Michael Kopech will not start the rest of the way, should not start the rest of the way. Don't worry about that. You know, there's some folks worried about that, where you want him as your multiple inning guy in the middle of games, the right-handed Andrew Miller type. I don't think you're going to have that kind of type. I think you're going to put it together and piecemeal it with all these guys on a one-inning, every once in a while, two-inning approach, with all of them able to come back a second day in a row now, including Kopech. It's 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel is who you're with on Hit and Run up until the top of the hour when Rami Makhlouf comes in for you. We'll come back, take your phone calls on The Score and Hit and Run.
Harry Carey at Wrigley Field on this noteworthy night indeed. 8-8-88. That's the date. And this bud's for you, Bill Murray.
Thank you, Larry. I've been dying under these lights until you handed me this thing.
It's such a pleasure to see you, especially on a noteworthy event like this one.
Well, I don't know how I feel about night baseball. It's great in the minor leagues, but it's someplace else to go in town besides your restaurant, which is a good thing.
I found a real sweetheart who'll never let me down. Got no time to fuss, I'll miss the bus. Maybe baby will be cross town.
Cubs and Sox tonight, the 8th of August at Wrigley Field. 6:09 p.m. is your first pitch. You'll hear it right here on 670 The Score. If you're going to watch it on TV, your choice is ABC, not ESPN. No. ABC. They've been looking to put Sunday Night Baseball on broadcast TV for a while. ABC has had Sunday night programming of consequence, but tonight it'll be Cubs and White Sox on ABC. If you're not a cable haver for some reason, you'll be able to get it right there. And the first voice you heard was Al Michaels during the 1987 World Series. And Al Michaels is going to be part of this broadcast for ABC tonight. I'm confused. I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. NBC is loaning Al Michaels to ABC because he's still on NBC. He does Sunday Night Football, right? But he's getting loaned out for this to be a part of the broadcast a little bit. Those lines are very, very thinly drawn these days. And, you know, I think that for the most part, that can be a good thing. Al Michaels was a baseball guy, I believe, before anything. He was the Cincinnati Reds broadcaster. And then for a while there, he was the voice of Monday Night Baseball on ABC. Our guest earlier in the show was Steve Stone. Steve Stone's debut as a broadcaster, I believe, was on ABC's Monday Night Baseball along with Don Drysdale and Al Michaels. I watched that broadcast, enjoyed it quite a bit. And yes, Michaels with the Cincinnati Reds, and then eventually part of a World Series. The first World Series he ever did was 1972. And that was the Reds against the Oakland A's in their first of three. But lots of famous moments, and he'll be back as part of the broadcast tonight. I would enjoy it if he did the whole thing. And Matt Vasgersian went away. But that's, you know, that's just me. That'll be your option for tonight. And then night baseball at Wrigley Field, no longer an anomaly. 1988, man, that's a woof. So wild. Interesting day here in baseball history. Also today, 25 years ago, the White Sox debuted the shorts on the South Side.
Also debuted this weekend 10 years ago.
Debuted. That's exactly right. What an unfortunate national broadcast that is.
Checking out the Big Mamba.
Yeah, what an unfortunate and ineffective tool to promote the game all around the country. The Score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. Just 10 minutes left of me, people. Maybe even less. But let's talk to Ron on the South Side for part of those 10 minutes, because Ron is the goods. Hi, Ron. Good morning. Welcome in. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Matt. Boy, I tell you, conjured up some bad images. Those shorts in 1976, wow. Ugly. I was listening to Steve Stone, and you always listen to him very closely. And when he talked about the bullpen, that he said that the White Sox bullpen, if this could possibly be one of the best bullpen in history. Now, we know that you have to, you know, particularly probably get through the playoffs and get to the World Series. But, you know, what's interesting, Matt, when the season first started, that was really projected to be the strength of this team, and then they struggled. But with Tapir and Kimball. So why don't you make a comment on that? Because we know about the Nasty Boys, but for me, the best bullpen that I've seen in probably the last 25, 30 years was Kansas City. They took the game right to the fifth inning, and the game was over. You know, for them to get to the World Series back-to-back, and it was primarily on a bullpen. So just maybe you can just chime in on that, he did make that statement. Thanks, Matt. I
appreciate you, Ron. Yeah, he did say that, one of the best bullpens ever. The thing about Kansas City and Ned Yost is they made his life very, very easy. They had one guy for the seventh in Herrera, one guy for the eighth in Wade Davis, one guy for the ninth in Greg Holland. Before that, Joaquin Soria was part of the mix. You know, and when you think historically about the great bullpens, you think about boilerplate roles like Mariano Rivera getting set up by Jeff Nelson, or Rivera setting up John Wetland before that, you know, a couple years ago, that Yankees bullpen with Chapman and, God, so many different guys with incredible swing and miss stuff, but they did not win it all. But anyway, my point being that usually there is one defined closer, one defined setup guy, and when they make it real easy for a manager, that can be something. Tony's going to have some mixing and matching, some buttons to push. He does have, far and away, the best strikeout rate of any bullpen. And especially now, when you look at the eight guys that are there, they have a combined strikeout rate of 35%. Mike Petriello did some work on that on MLB.com earlier in the week. The eight guys who are there now, 35%. That's really, really high, everybody. I will always think of the Nasty Boys, Randy Myers, Rob Dibble, Norm Charlton. Really just the three of them at a time when you didn't need many more than that, so you didn't have to go deeper. These days, you think about dominant bullpens, and it's got to be four, five, six different guys. The Tampa Rays last year was a remarkable bullpen without a thoroughly defined closer, but they had just so many different guys who could come at you so many different ways, and they made the World Series, and you all, everybody got a chance to see how that was put together. Could this one be up there? Sure. Sure it could. But it'll take some postseason excellence to lock it in. I mean, those Dennis Eckersley Oakland A's bullpens were just outrageous. And they had multiple people in there that you remember, Honeycutt and Gene Nelson and Eric Plunk and Greg Catterae and guys like that. This has a shot to be one of the greatest bullpens of all time, that's for sure. But the number of decisions that are going to have to be made along the way to make it execute is going to make it very, very compelling and very, very interesting. Thank you to my guest today, Steve Stone, in hour number one, Sahadev of Sharma at the beginning of this hour. If you're a Cub fan starved for state of the franchise conversation, it was a pretty good one at the beginning of the hour. Sean Anderson does a great job producing and did that again today. Rami Makhlouf is next from noon to 3 right here on The Score. Lots of Cubs and Sox talk in advance of that finale tonight. And then Chris Ranji at 3 o'clock up until Cubs pregame at 5:30. So live and local, keep it right here on The Score all afternoon. Me, I'm back with Danny Parkins all week starting tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy it. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
And you mentioned Phil Mickelson winning today in golf. When you think about Javi Baez, if you think about a golfer, he's John Daly, right? He's going for the downs every pitch.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.